That was pretty ominous at the start. We have lost Sam for the year. Fortunately, it's only for the year. The question is, when will the Rams ever have Sam Bradford again? This guy was the first overall pick back in 2010. Welcome to the program, by the way. Good to be with you. It's a Monday, noon Eastern time. Morning, possibly, where you are. Afternoon, possibly. Evening, possibly, where you are. Anyway, it's morning, afternoon, evening, all wrapped into one for the Rams as they try to move forward with Sean Hill. This Sam Bradford deal, first overall pick in 2010. Counting this year's salary of $14.015 million, he will have made $65 million in 5 years for, I believe, 49 total games. That's pretty good work if you can get it. Everybody feels bad for Sam Bradford right now, and at a certain level you should, because he's got to spend another year rehabbing a torn and then surgically repaired ACL. Guy's got $65 million for 49 NFL games. The real question is, will he get another $12.85 million, maybe $895 million? Either way, a lot of money next year from the Rams. Will they assume that lightning can't strike three times? Will they try to throw some good money after bad? Or will they move forward? Now that all those picks they got from Washington for the RG3 trade are gone, their chance of using a high pick on a quarterback is now gone unless they earn one. And they very well may earn one this year based upon what happens with Sean Hill. And I'm not sold on the idea that Sean Hill's the guy. Look, he's 34 years old. He's a career journeyman. All due respect, I don't think that Sean Hill's the answer for the St. Louis Rams. And I don't think the Rams are sold on it either. And I think the Rams probably could have and should have explored elsewhere for veteran help, especially when you know you've got a quarterback coming off of a torn ACL. Mike Vick was available. Mark Sanchez was available. The Rams were interested in Mark Sanchez. I don't know if Sanchez was interested in a reunion with Brian Schottenheimer, but the Rams could be in a pickle now. It's Sean Hill, Austin Davis, and Garrett Gilbert, possibly Gilbert Garrett. He was the sixth-round pick this year, and unless he becomes Tom Brady, another sixth-round pick, could be a long year for the Rams, who are going to play defense and run the ball, but still you have to have a passing game in today's NFL. You have to, especially this year with a renewed emphasis on illegal contact and defensive holding. If you can't take advantage of these rules, you're going to get taken advantage of by the teams that can throw the ball and throw the ball well. In Washington, there's a team that may not be able to throw the ball well with its current starting quarterback, a guy with a history of ACL tears. Sam Bradford and Robert Griffin III now tied for career ACL tears. Griffin had his first one back in college. And it's amazing to hear and see this groundswell for Kirk Cousins. What did Kirk Cousins ever do to merit a groundswell other than be the guy behind RG3? Last year down the stretch, Mike Shanahan, the former head coach, decided to go with Kirk Cousins, and it didn't work. They thought they'd be able to flip Kirk Cousins for a first-round draft pick. It didn't work. No one's even made a serious offer for Kirk Cousins. Now, maybe the Rams will, and maybe, just maybe, Washington will be interested in this. Because when you consider that RG3, he's got a little thin skin. He doesn't like to be criticized. And there have been reports in the past that one of the reasons he rushed back in 2013 from that torn ACL that was either suffered in the playoff game or aggravated or just completely imploded in the playoff game if it happened earlier in that regular season game against Baltimore. Either way, RG3 rushed back because, so the stories go, he didn't want to give Kirk Cousins a chance to come out and play well and then keep RG3 on the bench. So maybe the time has come to trade Kirk Cousins, not because of anything they can get for him, not because it would be a trade of luxury. It could be a trade of necessity. It could be time to get Cousins off the roster. When you've got Joe Theismann, who right now is one of the team's most ardent, bought and paid for employees from the standpoint of defending the team name and pretty much saying whatever needs to be said in order to maybe dig his tentacles in even deeper. Do you dig in tentacles? You don't dig in tentacles. Either way, when you've got Theismann coming out saying that Cousins should be the starter, and if it was a true competition, Cousins would be the guy, that's a problem. And RG3 hears that because RG3 hears everything. We know that because RG3 reacted to the doubters last week on Twitter. So he hears this, he knows what's going on, and it's not good for the team. and they're going to have to decide what to do once and for all about Griffin and Cousins. And if Cousins is still on the team moving forward and the team isn't successful, at some point the guy in charge of the team has to acknowledge, even though we gave up three first-round picks and a second-round pick to get RG3, maybe Kirk Cousins really is our better option. The longer Cousins remains on the roster, the greater the possibility that something like that will happen. Now, at some point, they're going to have to pay Griffin or Cousins or both. Well, it wouldn't be both, and it probably won't be neither. One or the other is going to get a second contract. They're eligible after this year. News from Sports Business Journal that DirecTV and the NFL are on the verge of extending their current arrangement, the NFL Sunday Ticket Package, the out-of-market Sunday games. You can watch all of them at the same time. I know Red Zone on cable providers has undermined that to a certain extent, but not by much. According to SBJ, $1.3 to $1.4 billion will be the price tag paid by DirecTV under the new deal. It was $1 billion under the old deal. That's a 30 to 40% increase over one deal to the next, and that results in a lot more money flowing into the NFL's coffers, which under the current collective bargaining agreement results in a lot more money flowing into the pockets of players via the salary cap. And it all comes back to these long-term contracts. Look, no one should be signing for the rest of this decade, whether it's Colin Kaepernick, Andy Dalton, Tyron Smith, who signed, he's the Cowboys' left tackle, into the next decade. No one should be signing these ultra-long-term deals, especially when they don't have real security. If you're going to sign a long-term deal, if you're going to sign through 2020, get it guaranteed the whole way, fully guaranteed, not that phony injury-only crap. And then you have to turn around and buy, if you're Colin Kaepernick, a disability policy payable to the team. You want true guarantees. You want true security. Because as the cap goes up, these deals are going to look worse and worse and worse and worse because the market is going to adjust accordingly. And the guys who are hitting the market the next year or two, this is great news for Ben Roethlisberger because he's going to get his $20 million a year from the Steelers. They're going to be able to afford $20 million a year because the cap is going up. Other guys who are getting toward free agency, Russell Wilson in Seattle. I can't wait till the Seahawks give Russell Wilson a true franchise quarterback deal with the implicit message being the 49ers take advantage of their core players. We take care of our core players. And I can guarantee you the Seahawks will hope to send that message, and it won't take a whole lot of brain power for people to figure it out, which is good because that means I may be able to figure it out. I've also figured out how to read the clock. It's time to take our first break. When we come back, Tom Curran and I, hot take from Tom Curran about Peyton Manning getting Wes Welker's most recent concussion. I don't necessarily agree with it, but we're going to have a nice little chat with Tom Curran of CSN New England about his take on Peyton Manning and Wes Welker, and also we'll see what's going on with the New England Patriots. Then we'll see what's going on with you. It's PFT Planet time, as it usually is. Can't say always, because we get two guests, we don't do it, but today we're going to do it. We could have had two guests today, but we decided to give you the floor, and hopefully you'll respect that by calling. We'll find out whether that happens to wrap the show. Before that, Tom Curran of CSN New England. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live. That's Broncos quarterback Peyton Manning talking about the blow to the head and also head hit the ground. Receiver Wes Welker hit by DJ Swearinger of the Houston Texans on a ball that was thrown into coverage. Three Texans in the vicinity. Swearinger lowers the boom as Welker tried to get low. He didn't get low fast enough. He got hit. He has a concussion. It's his third in his last 10 games. And our good buddy Tom Curran of CSN New England, he doesn't cover the Broncos, but he keeps an eye on Mr. Welker because Welker was a long-term member of New England Patriots, and Tom has what we call a hot take on the whole hot mess that unfolded over the weekend. But before we get to that, Tom, sources close to me tell me that you've got one of the little Tweety birds leaving the nest today. How are you holding up with that?
You know, not too bad. My oldest of three boys is moving into college today, and as we're driving up, he's actually just going here in Boston to Emerson. As we're driving up, we're going past the area where I remember driving past with a new baby in the back. You know, you're driving home from the hospital, you go there with an empty baby seat, and then you go home with a person in the baby seat, and it freaks you out. Now we're going up with a kid in the back who's much bigger than me to drop him off, and we'll return in a couple hours with no kid in the back. It's kind of freaky.
You know, I'd never really thought of it that way, and boy, that makes it even harder for me to do it a year from now. But we'll have to We'll have to keep in touch throughout this year to see how the transition goes, because I'm 1 year away from it. First day of senior year was last Monday, and that was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be.
You're going to be a mess.
I already am a mess. I'm going to be even more of a mess. It's a mess in Denver. They may need a new slot receiver after this Wes Welker thing. And I mean, there is a very serious component to this, because how many concussions can one guy take? How many times can you keep coming back? You can get cleared. You can overcome the symptoms. But at what point does the doctor say, sorry, Wes, you've exhausted your lifetime supply of concussions? That's a different issue for a different day, and it remains to be seen. Your take on it is this one was avoidable, and I will give you the floor to explain why you say that.
I think it's inherent on every quarterback to protect his receivers. I think every throw that a quarterback makes is not just about production and putting a player in a position to gain yards, but it's also to protect his health. What will the ramifications be of this throw? And on the throw to Wes Welker in a preseason game over the middle, when Manning was not under pressure, not flushed, I think you have to take double and triple caution when you're throwing to Wes Welker over the middle. And to give it to him there with DJ Swearinger quite clearly in the picture and also a safety coming up and a trailing defender, you're putting Welker in a position to get demolished. And I could see that happening in week 14 in a critical game. But I think that it was short-sighted. I think it was a bad decision. And I think it's, you know, you let him clear the linebackers, which is what, you know, a lot of teams will do with the slot guys. Let them clear the linebackers and get something going on the other side and let the window open over there. But to put him in that spot in a preseason game, I understand it's part of football, but a part of football and part of being a teammate is taking care of them and not putting them in prone positions. And I think Peyton Manning let him down somewhat on that.
But isn't it more accurately just a fluke in this situation? He got the ball to Welker in the middle of those three guys. Welker tried to get down, and but for an illegal hit from DJ Swearinger, Welker would have hit the ground. Welker would have been fine, and you get up and you live to play another play. How much of this really goes to Swearinger, not Manning?
And I'm sorry, I interrupted you after you gave me the floor. It's incredibly rude, but I just don't see how a guy who's been in the league as long as Manning has can't see what the ramifications of that throw will likely be. He's going to take a shot. He's going to take a pretty significant shot. The chances are higher that he's going to get smoked on that, infinitesimally higher, than it would be on a throw to the flat or someplace else. I don't think it's just a confluence of bad circumstances. I think he had a choice, and I think that he decided wrongly, not saying I don't give a damn whether or not Welker gets hurt. I'm sure in his heart of hearts he believes, you know, I probably wish I hadn't thrown that ball there. And I'd like to hear that. Unfortunately, I don't cover the Broncos and can't ask them that. But I think it is inherent upon quarterbacks to not put guys in that position. And I think that when you are as smart, as talented, and as cerebral as Peyton Manning, if everybody says that you know what's going to happen 2 or 3 seconds before it does, which is what these great quarterbacks do, then you knew when you let go of the ball, oh boy, he's going to get smoked.
You raise an interesting angle as it relates to Manning's arm strength. Do you think that one of the issues here is that Manning doesn't have the zip that he used to have? And is it possible he never really had the zip to get the ball in that window before his receiver gets hit in the head?
I don't think he has great zip on the ball, and I do think that invites more balls that are going to hang in the air longer and draw defenders over. And I can only contrast it, you know, honestly, with the guy I cover a lot, which is Tom Brady, who throws with great velocity over the middle and often throws it down, 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 and low to sliding receivers. It's either going to be complete or not. He throws downhill. Manning does not throw downhill as much as Rodgers and Brady do, to name two guys. And Cutler, I think, is another one. You also have an obligation when somebody's going down the seam. And if you look back, I linked a couple of the throws that Manning had to Austin Pauley, who had several concussions, one of which was a seam throw that really led, because it hung up there, really led Collie into a significant, you know, blow to the head, a scary one. And, you know, I'll say this too, Mike. You mentioned the Brady throw to Welker in the Super Bowl from 2011. Some people call it a drop. Some people call it a crap throw. I call it a missed catch. You know, is a little bit on both. But one of the reasons the ball wasn't as far inside and the catch wasn't as easy to make it would have been a spectacular catch, is that it was a looming safety coming, closing on that play. And I think that, you know, it would have been easy for Brady to just lead it down the seam, right down the numbers, and not make him have to twist. But you have to be cognizant of who's closing in. And I think that every good quarterback is cognizant and takes care of his guys.
How much of this traces to the reality, or at least not necessarily the reality, but your belief that if Walker was still with the Patriots, he'd be with a quarterback who would be in position to take care of him better on a more consistent basis, and maybe Walker wouldn't have had three concussions in his last 10 games?
I'll tell you, Mike, it's funny, you know, you asked me that, and to honestly say it, when he went there, I said that Manning is going to get him hurt. Brady knew how to use him. I didn't think he'd be as successful as he was there. Now, of the three concussions he's had, the one that he had against Kansas City last year was completely Wes's doing. You know, he caught it out, he cut it back, he ran, he had an opportunity to go down, he didn't, he got converged on by three guys. The next one, which was administered by Bernard Pollard, was similar to the hit in terms of what the route was, but Bernard Pollard didn't have to smoke Wes in the head. This one, you know, was. I think that in the final analysis, to get to your question, I think if Welker was still here, he didn't have a litany of concussions while he was in New England. I think that the litany of this concussion, I don't think would have happened. You know, who knows? I mean, he might have been a concussion waiting to happen here, and who knows how many bell rings were actually concussions occurred here. But I'll tell you this. Brady took care of Welker in a very interesting way, I think. Most of his catches were in the flat, in the seam. Certainly, you can find plenty that were over the middle. But when he got blown up here by Ryan Clark, that was a Matt Castle throw in the AFC Championship. By Pollard, that was an outside throw. Not as much over the middle. And I'll say this. It traces back, in my mind somewhat, to Wes Welker not being in the best position for himself. He was better off in New England. But what happened was, from everything that I gathered, reported, was told, and know to be true, Wes Welker's agents, David Dunn, Brian Murphy, Athletes First, had him convinced that $8 million a year was out there for the taking. Patriots' offer of $5 million plus incentives wasn't going to get it done, so Welker said he's testing the market. 2 days later, after free agency's been going for 2 days, Welker's walking around with a two-year, $12 million contract in his hand asking somebody to match it. If Welker didn't follow the advice of his agents and didn't chase a market that wasn't there, he probably would have been back with the team that really wanted him back at their cost. So that's my take on that.
Now the question is whether he's going to be back with anyone. Based on what you know of Welker, and you covered him for several years when he was with the Patriots, is he the kind of guy who will keep going no matter what anyone says? As long as he's cleared, he'll keep playing. Or will he reach a point where he takes a step back and says, you know what, maybe it's in my long-term best interest to move on?
I think he's a really, really intelligent guy, very smart, and I think that he is beloved by his teammates and friends. And I think that he's probably going to have to listen to guys like Peyton Manning, who, again, I want to say, I think Peyton Manning's a good guy, and I don't think Peyton Manning likes one bit the notion that Wes Welker is injured after a throw from him. And I'm sure that he'll want Wes's best interest at heart in advising him. I think Manning, I think John Fox, I think that Brady, I think that any number of people around the NFL would advise him, you know, with his best interest at heart. I don't know what that advice will be, but we'll see how he comes out of this. I mean, you and I both know, Mike, it gets worse every time you get one. It's going to take longer to come back. I think you should talk to some guys. You know, Austin Pauley would probably be a good guy to talk to right now. He went through all that crap, and then he came back and was a fairly decent contributor down the stretch for the Patriots last year. He's been able to do it. Can Wes do it?
And I can't imagine Welker not wanting to hold it together for one more year to see what happens with the defensive additions the Broncos have made. Maybe this is the year. People assume Welker's got one of the Super Bowl rings. He doesn't. He came right after the third Super Bowl win in 4 years, so he's been there twice, but he doesn't have one. And I'm sure that, like every player, he'd like to retire with one, and it'll be a real dilemma for him. There's a dilemma facing the Patriots. Tuesday and Saturday, the cuts to 75, the cuts down to 53. Some big names ushered out the door yesterday. Which name surprised you the most of the guys who, at least word has emerged so far, they're going to be cut?
Absolutely, Tommy Kelly, because he was a valuable guy for the first 4 weeks of 2013. Blew his ACL against Cincinnati and worked really diligently to get back. And he's played a ton of plays next to Vince Wilfork in this preseason, was the starter at defensive tackle. That one surprised me. Will Smith didn't emerge at all. I think he's still got value in the league, but you know, he's still got a ton of power that we could see in drills, but he just didn't show up. And James Anderson surprised me a little bit. He was a decent coverage linebacker, but that was the only thing he did. He didn't really play special teams. It didn't show up as an outstanding coverage guy. So the Tommy Kelly thing surprised me. He can still play in this league for somebody. I hope he does find a place. He's a tremendous guy.
What happens with Ryan Mallett at the backup quarterback position?
I think he's going to be put out in the front lawn with a best offer sign on him for the remainder
of the
week.
What if the best offer doesn't come? Is he going to get cut?
I think so, Mike. I mean, Garoppolo has done much, much better than I thought he would. The team has plenty of places, whether it be offensive line where they have some injuries, where they'll need to keep extra guys on the roster. Linebacker where they'll have to do that, and defensive line as well. That's really what it'll come down to. It's a luxury item, a third quarterback on your roster. And Jimmy Garoppolo has taken 84 snaps already this preseason. It was reported earlier this today that Garoppolo will start on Thursday against the Giants in the final preseason game, which, you know, hints they want to get him more work and they're trying to keep Mallett out of harm's way. So I think they're going to have to release him. And that'll be interesting because, you know, once the league knows that a player is on the verge of being released, the urgency to go and make a trade for him is reduced. So who out there is panicking about either their starter or backup situation? And Ryan Mallett didn't really announce himself as a guy who's ready to take over as a starter in the league, Mike Mayock's comments notwithstanding.
And actually, Tom, you could look at it the other way. If you believe that one of the teams at the top of the pecking order for a waiver claim would take Ryan Mallett, the only way to get him is to trade for him. So if you're farther down, like, say, I don't know, the St. Louis Rams, you may have to send something to the Patriots if you're going to have a shot at him, because I think we all assume that the team currently sitting atop the waiver pecking order would be very inclined to put in a claim for Ryan Mallett, and that's the Houston Texans. Do you believe that Bill O'Brien, the former Patriots offensive coordinator, would want Mallett to join that fray in Houston if he's available?
I don't know. I mean, I would have believed that to be the case in April, and I know there were intimations, despite the disputes that arose after I reported that, that there was interest, that he was, there were conversations, see what happens during this draft, we might be in touch on Mallett. But his performance has been so inconsistent. You know, he makes two or three throws that you say, wow, that's why he's in the league, that's why he was a big deal. And then he makes three more that you say, geez, where did that come from and what was he doing?
Well, it's interesting stuff with the Patriots, and I think the Patriots, we'll talk about this more maybe as we get closer to week one. We are pretty close to week one, but I think that the Patriots are going to be pretty good this year. What's your sense right now?
Defensively, Mike, that's the interesting spot. You know, they have a kid, Malcolm Butler, who appears primed to be starting next to Darrell Revis at the opposite corner. And Brandon Browner was the ballyhooed signing as a free agent, but he's got the four-game suspension, and, you know, I haven't seen a ton from him. They've really petered out his reps as they've gone along in the preseason, probably because of not needing him for the first month. But they have a good fleet of cover guys, and they have a much-improved pass rush. They're much better in tandem. Now, they did it against Carolina, and Carolina sucks at receiver, to be blunt, but they could be much better on defense than we have seen in past years. And then offensively, you know, does Gronk start the season? Write him down for 27 points a game if he does. If he doesn't, it can be a scuffle again.
Yeah, and if he starts the season, it'll be 27 points a game until he's hurt again, and that's why I'd keep him in the shed until Thanksgiving or thereabouts, so I have him when it counts in January.
Do you disagree with me on the Manning thing?
I do to a certain extent. Yeah, no, I don't strenuously object. I strenuously object. Well, that changes everything. I think that, look, you can't throw passes. You can't allow yourself to process as part of all the other information that a quarterback has to, in real time, digest. Where's the blocker? Is somebody coming at my knee? Did the running back pick up the blitzer? First read, second read, third read. Guy's open, I'm throwing the ball. Not, is he so open that he can get to the ground without being illegally hit by someone's forearm in the helmet? I just think that there are certain bags that you have to set down when you're a quarterback and you decide you're going to throw the ball. You got to throw the ball to the open guy. And if the guy gets hurt, next man up. And if a slot receiver has a concussion problem, that's a deeper issue here. If a slot receiver has a concussion problem, at a certain point, the slot receiver needs to count up his money and decide whether or not he's got enough money to live deep into his 90s. Otherwise, he's not going to live deep into his 70s or 60s if he keeps getting banged up. But at a certain point, you just got a guy that has had too many concussions, and you can't worry about each individual play. Oh, we got to be careful. Wes isn't going to get a concussion on this play. When you get to that point, it's time to move on from Wes Welker.
Yeah, well, hey, that's another way of looking at it that I really had. If you take the field that night and you're Wes Welker, you're good to go for every play. Okay, I still think that Manning, you know, that's where we differ, is I think that he could have been had enough foresight to say this isn't a place where I want to throw it to Wes. But, yeah, I mean, if you take the field, you accept, you signed the waiver, so to speak, and said, I'm good to go for whatever throw I take. And I'm sure he would have signed that waiver. It's just...
And here's where I disagree with you even more. I don't call this one a hospital ball. I don't think this is the classic you're going to get your receiver killed throw, where there's a guy coming across the middle and you've got Jack Tatum in his prime, helmet down, coming right at the guy as he's being led into that defensive back. Wes Welker wasn't led into Swearinger. The ball was thrown to him amidst a trio of Texans. He caught it, tried to get down, but for the illegal hit, he would have gotten down. So I don't call it a hospital ball. This isn't the kind of thing where you look at it and say, oh, you're going to get somebody killed. Wes Welker, given his history, and that's the thing. You get to that point where you got to worry about that receiver in that spot. You have to have a different rule for him as to how open he is before you throw it. It's time for a new slot receiver.
Yeah, and good. Because that's where we differ, is I think you let him into the stuff.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Tom Curran. Fortunately, the FCC has no jurisdiction over this program. Yet.
Yeah, she won't let me.
All right. Hey, good stuff. I never heard Eminem with a country twang either, so that was pretty good too. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Okay, buddy.
All right. Tom Curran, CSN. NewEngland.com. Boy, I really feel for Tommy, too. When the birds start leaving the nest, man, he's got three. I got one. And next year is going to be rough. Next year is going to be rough, even though I think my kid's just going to go up the road to West Virginia University. It's still not going to be easy. What will be easier, I hope, is answering your questions. But first, you got to pick up your cell phone device, 888-237-5269. We've got some Twitter questions that I haven't looked at yet, which could make for some interesting answers. I'm going to look at them during the break. When we come back, we'll answer them, plus any of the calls that happen to come in. If you pick up your phone and dial 888-237-5269, we will be right back. This is PFT Live. Let's go straight to the Twitter inbox, PFT Planet Time, on this Monday edition of PFT Live, August 25. And from @SportsJunkie23, the question is, will Wes Welker ever play again? This gets back to what we talked about with Tom Curran as to how Welker got the concussion. And look, going forward, it doesn't matter how he got it. You can get a concussion on any play, anytime, anywhere, anything. Injuries are part of football. Now that he's had his third concussion in his last 10 games, the question becomes, what will the future hold for Wes Welker? Now, my understanding is they're exploring some potentially cutting-edge technologies just to get a feel for what the damage is, where he is right now, and to get a feel for what the risk is going forward. There's no good way to prevent a concussion. No matter what your helmet is made out of, no matter what you have on it, anytime that the head stops and the brain inside the head is still moving, the brain can bounce off the inside of the skull and cause a concussion. So it doesn't matter what you wrap your head in, you eventually and inevitably will get concussions. For Wes Welker, the question is, how many concussions are too many concussions? Which one will be the one that ends his career without question? How much more risk is he willing to take? And this is a gradual, and you know what? I just thought of something. Given that the concussion settlement, it's speak now or forever hold your peace time. And if he wants to have protection in the event of future development of dementia, ALS, other conditions covered by the concussion settlement at some point down the road, you need to retire now. In fact, you're arguably too late. But I believe, based on what I've heard, that anybody who retires now before this settlement is officially finalized will have an opportunity to be part of the class action. But that class action settlement is only going to cover retired players. If you're not retired when this thing's done, you're on your own going forward. And good luck making a case for liability against the NFL or anyone else now that everyone knows all the risks that relate to concussions. So that's another factor for Wes Welker. And you know what? That could be the one that pushes the needle to the walk away from the game side. Let's go to Fred in South Carolina. Fred, you're on PFT Live. What's up, buddy?
Hey, what's up, man? I was just wondering, I don't know if you saw the play before Sam Bradford got hurt. The one, like, when I forgot who the defensive player name for the Browns was, but you can, like, if you look at it, like, you would see where he got, like, not he got hit and went down to the ground, but he wasn't hurt. And I think two plays later after that, that's when he suffered a freak accident. Do you think, like, Jeff Fisher and Les Snead, you think we should have pulled him out, like, just for cautionary, like, before the play he got hurt on?
Well, you know what? That's a great question. And it's a legitimate concern when you're talking about a preseason game and you've got a quarterback who's coming back from an ACL. But the problem is, first of all, in real time, good luck spotting that, recognizing it, and adjusting to it that quickly. The coaching staff is trying to get ready for the regular season. The coaching staff is treating this like a real game, especially the third game of the preseason. I don't know that anybody's in position to even flag the issue if there was anything. And I didn't see the two plays before I've seen the injury. But if there was something that may have raised a red flag a couple of plays before that, I just don't know that the structure's in place to flag that and get him off the field. I still have concerns about the effectiveness of the structure that's in place league-wide to spot when guys have concussions or other injuries that need to be checked out. It looks to me, in the way that Jeff Fisher, the head coach of the Rams, explained it, you had that brace on. But when you apply pressure, something's going to give. And for whatever reason, and we always hear this, every surgery is a success, every rehab is ahead of schedule. That, when the pressure was applied from a physics standpoint to Sam Bradford's left leg, the ACL gave. And if you've ever seen Sam Bradford out of pads, he's kind of got that Joe Montana build where it's kind of like the gangly long legs. And I think the taller you are, boy, those legs just kind of stand out. And the way the pressures all came together, you got a fairly new ACL in there. Yes, he's done everything he can to strengthen it, but how much can you really do? If you saw Hard Knocks last week when they were doing an ACL repair, I mean, it's a lot of hardware and carpentry. I mean, you got stuff that you hope holds together, and it may not. And maybe it didn't get screwed in the right way. Maybe it got screwed in too tight. When they were showing last week in Hard Knocks how many times you screwed, how many times is too many? Is it too? You know, these are issues that when it's time to go out and play again and that thing pops, there may be 1,000 reasons why it did. But the bottom line is it did, and I think it would have been too hard to get him off the field if there was anything that would have happened before that injury to flag that. Let's go back to the Twitter bag from at the Alex Bente, or Bent. How long until rookie quarterbacks Johnny Manziel and Teddy Bridgewater start for their respective teams? With Manziel, I firmly believe that the hot spot is week 5, because the Cleveland Browns, with Brian Hoyer as the starting quarterback, begin the season with the Pittsburgh Steelers, New Orleans Saints, and Baltimore Ravens. And then there's a bye week. And that's where you have 2 weeks to get Johnny Manziel ready to go. Week 5 at Tennessee, Jimmy Haslam taking the Browns down to Nashville. Haslam is a Tennessee native. He would love nothing more than to break out that brand new sports car, especially if the one that was already in the shed is a clunker. So week 5, Johnny Manziel at Tennessee, I think, is the one to watch. For Bridgewater, I think it just depends on how they play. The Vikings don't have a bye until week 10. So, and there's some not too easy games on the schedule. I think if Castle, the starter, struggles, you could see something. And there's a short week. I think the potential hot spot here would be after the October 2 Thursday night game at Green Bay. It's a mini bye week to get ready for a home game against the Lions. That's 5 games in. I think week 6 is the time to watch for the switch from Matt Castle to Teddy Bridgewater in Minnesota. But who knows how that's going to play out. I think the Vikings feel better about Bridgewater than the Browns currently feel about Manziel, but neither guy is going to be starting as of week 1 unless some fluke thing happens over the next week or two for the starting quarterbacks. Let's go to Eric in Philadelphia. Eric, you're on PFT Live.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good, man.
I'm calling because a fantasy question. My league gets half a point for completions, so should I take a top-tier quarterback in the first round?
Half a point for completions for the quarterbacks? Look, I'm always a believer in taking quarterbacks high in a fantasy draft, just because year to year, quarterbacks who have performed at a high level are far more likely to continue to perform at a high level. Adrian Peterson, we don't know what he's going to do this year. The other top running backs, we don't know what they're going to do this year. They could get injured. There could be a shift in philosophy. You could get off to a slow start. Chris Johnson frustrated a lot of people after he became CJ2K. He struggled to get back to that form. He could be a surprise this year. I'd rather go the conservative route, take a franchise quarterback, whatever the scoring system. I want a franchise quarterback early because I know that guy is going to generate a lot of points for me. And then the most fun about fantasy football for me is to find those guys once the season starts to unfold, the guys who are getting the reps, the guys who are stepping in for injuries, making those waiver claims and sweating them out, hoping you get that guy. And then going forward with that, I like to adjust the team on the fly. I think too much gets made of this assumption that you're going to have this workhorse running back who's going to come out and wire to wire generate a ton of points. The days of the LaDainian Tomlinson effect, I think, are long over in the NFL. I typically like to avoid the fantasy questions just because I think it's all, who knows, it's all guesswork. But that's my best guess. So you asked, I answered. Next question from @CherryBoy1988, do you think the Rams would trade for Christian Ponder? I think the Vikings would love if the Rams would call up and trade for Christian Ponder. He's in his fourth NFL season. His salary is guaranteed under his rookie contract. Yeah, I think the Vikings would love to trade. However, I would say this. Maybe the Vikings wouldn't be thrilled about the idea of Christian Ponder becoming a member of the Rams for week one because the Vikings play the Rams week one. I think the Rams need to do something. We talked about this earlier. I don't know that Sean Hill's the answer. And when you've got a guy coming off a torn ACL, is Sean Hill really the best? Is he the best you can do? All due respect to Sean Hill. Is that the best you can do when Mike Vick, Mark Sanchez, and I know Mark Sanchez, no superstar coming off of the New York Jets, but a lot of options out there. Is Sean Hill the best you can do? Why not keep Kellen Clemens, who was 4-3 down the stretch for the Rams last year? And the Rams are going to play old school football, and I think now we know you're going to see eight guys up at the line of scrimmage. They're going to be trying to clog the running lanes, Zach Stacy, Benny Cunningham, etc. And they're going to be forcing Sean Hill to beat them with the pass, and we'll see whether or not that works. But not a good development for a team that's in the toughest division in the NFC or, for that matter, the NFL. Last question of the day from @I'mRonShort. What's your prediction on the Ravens making the playoffs? I have not made my final preseason picks yet. I push it as long as possible, in large part because of the injury factor. I mean, anybody who would have pegged the Rams as the potential champions of the NFC West has to be rethinking that now. And if you've already mailed in your picks, it's too late. I think the Ravens or the Steelers will win the division this year in the AFC North. Last year, I was a believer that the Bengals could make it to the Super Bowl. They continue to make it to the playoffs. They can't win a playoff game. I think it is so hard to reset that many years in a row. And this year, you got a new offensive coordinator, new defensive coordinator. I think it's too much for the Bengals to overcome. So I think the Ravens have a good chance of making it. They have a good chance of winning the division. A lot of it hinges on whether or not the new offense under Gary Kubiak can be a lot better than last year's offense. Offensive line and also their franchise quarterback, Joe Flacco, not really a franchise quarterback last year, if he's better in this system. That defense, still very good, very underrated. I think the Ravens could get back to the postseason like they did for five straight years to start John Harbaugh's tenure as head coach of the team. That's it for today's edition of PFT Live. We'll be back tomorrow, 12 o'clock Eastern time. Back from, I know last week it was all 1 o'clock, but this week it's 12 o'clock Eastern time. Next week, starting on Tuesday, it's going to be 9 o'clock local time because I'm going to be in Seattle. My entire schedule is going to get screwed up. It still beats working for a living. But I'm going to have to get up like at 4 a.m. to have a normal day. So we'll see how that goes, especially with the products out there that are now legal for consumption, and I'm not drug tested. So that'll be an interesting subplot for next week. We'll see what happens in Seattle. We'll see what happens before Seattle because we still have a week left, a full slate of preseason games on Thursday night. Everybody plays on Thursday night. None of them are nationally televised because it's not going to be a lot of starters. Tonight on NBCSN's Pro Football Talk, Andrew Luck will be on the program Check us out then. Check us out back here tomorrow. And check us out around the clock at ProFootballTalk.com. Have a great day.